The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it. We can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Shri Buddha, Shri the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. Well, first let me say thank you. I mean, it's really, really kind and generous of you. We really deeply appreciate you and all you do for us. So today, I want to talk about gratitude, generosity, and forgiveness. They just seem to fit together for me. We've actually come here today because of our gratitude for each other. You know, as is obvious, we support and benefit from the mutual training of the Fourfold Sangha. So we benefit from each other, and we support each other. If I'm incorrect in what I heard a number of years ago, I thought that I heard that the Dalai Lama said that when the Fourfold Sangha is firmly established in a new country or a new culture, then Buddhism will flourish. So I'm hoping I'm quoting him correctly, but it seems to make sense to me, you know. When something, the reality of something, the basis of something gets fully established, then something can begin to flourish. And I'll be so bold as to say that Buddhism is taking root in the West and is no longer seen as something that is foreign or strange. You know, when I started, I think it was close to 40 years ago, 30 some years ago, you know, you go to a bookstore and you'd find 5 books on Buddhism, and they'd be in the occult section. Now you go into whatever bookstores are still open, and you know, you find shelves, and obviously online you can, there's a lot. Say. So I'll also be bold enough to say that I think that Buddhism can offer something to the West that is unique, hopeful, and refreshing. I think that Buddhism offers a slightly different way of looking at life, slightly different perspective, and how we might live and benefit in the human form. So it's not a matter of apples and oranges, but there's a difference. And it's not a matter of Buddhists having a hold on the truth. You know, one of the things that drew me to Buddhism from the very beginning was the Buddha's liberality, and that he said, you know, if this works for you, great. If it doesn't, find something else that does. You know, there's different ways. So I think the Buddha was an extremely wise and compassionate human being. And I think that again, one of the things that drew me to Buddhism was that he taught that we too could become this. It wasn't just for the special people or the enlightened people. It was for everybody. Anybody who wanted to take up the training and work at it. So this morning we chanted Great Master Dogen's piece from the Shishogi, in which we talk about the four wisdoms: charity, tenderness, benevolence, and sympathy. Okay. I think they're very interesting concepts, and I think they're all contained in each other. I think in the longer version, actually, of that this is taken from Dogen's writings, that this has been taken from, that are in the Shobo Genzo, he said this, there's actually 16 of them, because they participate in each other. Okay. Also in the Shishogi, Great Master Dogen says that the Buddha nature should be thus simply awakened in all living things within this world. I like simple. I've always felt that it's a great relief that this is what wisdom is. You know, if wisdom were some kind of sublime, supreme, all-knowing state, I wasn't going to get there. But these practices are actually something that human beings can do. And that's to me is the echoes throughout the Buddhist teachings. Charity, tenderness, benevolence, and sympathy. And actually, you can also throw in gratitude. Reverend Master Jiyu used to say that that's the fifth wisdom. These are tangible practices that we mere mortals can do. The crux of the matter, though, is that we have to practice them ourselves. There's no magic pill, no magic meditation, no magic mantra that will get us there. We have to practice them. And as the great Master Dogen also says in the Shoshogi, you need no further teaching than the above in order to show gratitude. And you must show it truly in the only real way in your daily life. So the real way, the way of the Buddha, is to get in there and practice these wisdoms. And the grounds for practice, the place of practice, is our everyday lives. I mean, where else could it be? But, you know, I don't know what your mind is like, but mine misses that all the time. Because it's looking for it somewhere outside of that. And in fact, it's right in front of our nose. We're deeply touched by your generosity and kindness to us today. I mean, in an economic time where things are kind of rough for people, this is impressive, your generosity. And I want you to know that, as I think you know, that we'll use these many offerings to support the monastery in the months ahead. Okay, and we will share them with all who come here. That's what we do. If we have too much of something, you know, in time, if we see we better not hold on to something, you know, we have too much of a certain thing, we'll share it with organizations in the area who help those in need. This is a practice that we've been doing for a long time. So, again, thank you. For me, generosity is the starting place of training. And it's actually also the staying spot of training as well. I don't think one goes through training and becomes superior, you know, where the point where generosity is no longer needed, or graduates from the practice of giving. You know, occasionally I've heard someone somewhere say that their being there was their offering. And I hear that and I think, okay, you know, I don't think I can say that for myself. I don't know, I'm me. I am not a great offering. I'm just me. it's fundamental for myself, for my practice, to continue to practice generosity in its many forms and expressions. And, you know, as we know, generosity is just not about giving things. It's about giving of yourself, your time, your mind. It's also about giving up of your opinions sometimes. It really, to me, encapsulates the name that I was given. I don't know why I'm emotional, excuse me, but my name means, it means great heart or magnanimous mind. And I think I was given that because Reverend Master Jiyu thought it was something that I could aspire to, not necessarily something that I showed. So, And I think that's what generosity is. You know, that big, magnanimous heart and mind that stretches way beyond the self. When you offered your kind gifts today, you passed them from hand to hand, person to person. This, to me, symbolizes the fact that these gifts come from all of you to all of us. Okay? So everybody touches them. Okay? That they're part of everybody. Well, it's not like my gift or I'm the receiver. It's broader than that. And really, on a deeper level, this points to the reality, what actually is the gift? Who actually is the giver? And who actually is the receiver? You know, sometimes the real giver is the receiver, and the real gift is the giver, or whatever combination you want, but it's just, it's bigger than a gift, a receiver, a giver. And it's still those. You know, in some ways, you know, when we were passing things, it goes so rapidly that you just see the flow of compassion, love, and wisdom. It's part of all of us if we let it be part of all of us. It's this wonderful circle. Okay? And I had the honor at the altar to offer each gift to the Buddha. Because really, what generosity is about our Buddha nature. It's about something bigger than us. Okay, usually in a ceremony here, you, the lay trainees, sit on the outside and the monks sit on the inside. But today, it was roles reversed, okay? You were on the inside, we were on the outside. So the mandala, you know, it kind of flows in and out and changes its configuration. That's what River Master Jiyu called the kaleidoscopic mind. And there's also the kaleidoscopic heart, you know? And if we practice these five wisdoms, including gratitude, we see the flow of it in our everyday lives. Sometimes in our practice, the student is the teacher, and the teacher is the student. I'm sure all of you who are parents have found that with children. You know, sometimes you're the parent, and they're the children, and sometimes the children are the parents. They're the ones with the wisdom. But we help each other. So regardless of our roles or positions, generosity never moves from its place of wisdom. As I said, that you know, in our daily practice, there are many expressions of generosity that manifest. And I think, as I also said, you know, tenderness, benevolence, and sympathy are in fact generosity. They're just different forms. I think distinct in that, and that's the reason which this teaching actually originally comes from the Buddha. That's where Dogen took it from. But, you know, we have this, it's really important to delineate things, and then there's a point where they all kind of blur, you know, and they all mingle and they all compound and become more. So I think, and I may have said this already, that one of the greatest areas that we can practice generosity is actually in the areas that we find it difficult to give in. So a kind word, listening to someone's pain and difficulties, maybe over and over again, the creating of a situation, a place, a sangha, where people can come and train. These are all forms of generosity. I was at our hermitage for retreat and rest the last couple of weeks, and during that time I read a book by the Dalai Lama. It's actually interviews with the Dalai Lama and journals by Victor Chan, who writes the book. It's called The Wisdom of Forgiveness. And part of the book is these intimate conversations that he had with the Dalai Lama, and part of it is about him and his reflections and about life in general. Highly recommend the book. Victor Chan, he's Chinese. Okay, he was born in, I think, in Hong Kong, and then came over to Vancouver, I think Vancouver, Canada, and finished his education. And he lives, I think, in the West now. But he had an opportunity many years ago through a friend of his to meet the Dalai Lama, and he was really surprised, you know, he being Chinese, that the Dalai Lama was so warm and kind and welcoming to him, because you know, there were the troubles with the Tibetans and the Chinese, and yet this didn't seem to be a problem for the Dalai Lama. And one of the things that you see in his conversations with the Dalai Lama is, again and again, Victor Chan is kind of presenting some difficult situations. And in each of these difficult situations, the Dalai Lama just has this broad heart. And he doesn't get angry, at least express it, usually. You know, he says he gets knocked off center a bit sometimes with the things that happen, especially the things that have happened with Tibet. But he is not angry at the Chinese. He forgives them. Okay? And, you know, some places in Buddhist literature, when you read that forgiveness is not actually a Buddhist concept. And I don't think that's true. I think, you know, here's real proof of it for me if the Dalai Lama is talking about forgiveness. I think it's and I think partly why people say that it isn't is because you're supposed to catch it before the point you need to forgive someone, before your mind is already, you know, churning that way. Well, we can do that sometimes, but we can't do that always. And, you know, the Dalai Lama can't do that always. But you could see in his conversations with the Dalai Lama that through the Dalai Lama's deep understanding of the three characteristics of existence, suffering, impermanence, and not self, that the Dalai Lama is able to just find this place in these difficult situations to not be angry, you know, and to forgive. He doesn't like the situations. He's not condoning them. He wishes they were otherwise. And yet he can still let go. Okay. Seems I left a page somewhere. That's all right. I think I know where I can go from here. So anyway, I recommend that book. It's just a wonderful book. I wanted something light to read. And it's not heavy. But it's really, I thought it was really heartening and inspiring, of something that we can do, a practice that we can do. Because okay? I think we can practice forgiveness. I found this little bit in a book called Buddhism, Pure and Simple by Master Xing Yun. He's the one who wrote Describing the Indescribable about the Diamond Sutra. Okay? And it's a section entitled, Do Not Dwell on Old Wrongs. So he says, not dwelling on old wrongs is also a form of generosity, as well as wisdom. For when we dwell on negative memories, we often become resentful or angry. And these states just lead towards more of the same. The cycle of birth and death can be seen in the large picture of one lifetime after another. But it can also be seen in the details of one life. Dwelling on old wrongs eventually leads to new wrongs, which then quickly become old wrongs in someone else's mind. I know for myself, if I don't allow compassion in, if I'm upset about something, somebody, something that happened, but if I cannot find a place of forgiveness and compassion in my heart, I can make the same mistake as I'm reacting against. Maybe in a slightly different way, but you know, we human beings just have this propensity. We seem to do this. Because if we become righteous, we don't kind of settle in our upset. And yes, it takes time. You know, it isn't snap of a finger. Sometimes it takes time and a lot of hard work, but it's worth it. Okay, where was I here? Okay, returning anger with anger, seeking revenge, brooding about the past, refusing to forgive. All of these are actions that perpetuate the cycle of suffering and pain. Most evil is caused by people reacting negatively to the perception that someone has done them wrong. You know, you hear about these conflicts we have had in recent years where there's genocide. And there'll be some kind of old wrong, old hurt. It can be hundreds of years old and it gets stirred up again. You know, it's like the old, in this country, the clan wars between the McCoys and, you know, somebody else. You know, there was something that happened years ago to somebody. And if somebody doesn't break that cycle, then it continues. And it's really hurtful and kind of silly, unfortunate. The way to stop the cycle is to take responsibility for your part in it. As much as you can, forgive and forget. And he says as much as you can, because, you know, I'm not naive, he's not naive, it's not always easy. And do not dwell on the people that you believe have harmed you. Not only will you benefit, but so will society in general. And then I guess this is a scripture, spreading the light says, repay anger with kindness, never dwell on old wrongs. During the time of the Buddha, Devadatta tried to harm the Buddha several times by telling lies about him, by attacking him with a drunken elephant, and by shoving a boulder down a hill at him. To none of this did the Buddha ever once respond with anger or resentment. Instead, he said, Devadatta is only helping me by urging me forward. He is my great teacher. If you can see your foes who have done wrong to you as your great teachers, you will have understood this realization and more, for forgiveness of this magnitude is always followed by an enormous upsurge in joy and good fortune. When we break the chains of the past like this, we actually change the conditions and directions of our karma. While most of us realize that it's best not to dwell in old wrongs, few of us are able to do this. The right way to let go of the past is to benefit from it. Rather than resent something that we perceive as wrong, we should look at it more closely and discover how it may help us. No one grows spiritually who experiences nothing. Setbacks and hardships can and should be used to train us and spur us on to new achievements. Countries that have only one political party stagnate, while those that have functioning democratic institutions do not. That's interesting. Bodies that never get any exercise become weak, while those that are forced to strain themselves grow strong and healthy. Hardship is nothing more than our perception of one side of a dualistic pair. Now, whenever we find ourselves being challenged by hardship, we should consider how it strengthens us and helps us. When others insult us or complain about us or treat us badly, we should accept them as teachers who can help us become stronger and wiser. Old wrongs are nothing more than old lessons that we have not yet fully learned. To resent them is to compound the problem that brought them on in the first place. I also found this interesting teaching from the Buddha, and it's in the Numerical Discourses of the Buddha, Anguttara Nikaya, if I'm saying that correctly. And it's in the chapter of fives. And it's a very interesting title. It's How to Remove Grudges. Because I'm sure there were grudges at the Buddha's time. Just right there in his community. Because in fact, he addresses this to the monks. And you know, the Buddha's teachings were in response to difficulties around him. So there must have been something in the monastic sangha going on at that time that he felt he needed to address. There are, O monks, five ways of getting rid of a grudge. Okay, so the first way, by means of which a monk can remove all grudges that have arisen within him. There are, O monks, five ways of getting rid of a grudge, by means of which a monk can remove all grudges that have arisen within him. What five? If a grudge arises towards any person, then one should cultivate loving kindness towards him. You know, this morning we recited saying the Metta Sutra. If a grudge arises toward any person, then one should cultivate compassion towards him. If a grudge arises towards any person, then one should cultivate equanimity towards him. In these ways, one can remove the grudge towards that person. So that's three of them, okay? Loving kindness, compassion, and equanimity. And in the footnote on this, it interestingly says that the Buddha at this point did not include sympathetic joy, because probably he felt that they weren't quite there, you know? Buddha's very realistic in his teachings, you know? They weren't quite ready to offer sympathetic joy to those that they had grudges on. But, you know, he'd take loving kindness, compassion, and equanimity pretty good. So the fourth way one should pay no attention to him and give no thought to him. In that way, one should remove the grudge. I think that'd be really difficult for me, but maybe people can do it. You know, the Buddha, he gave you choices. Said, you know, it doesn't work this way, try this one. So maybe some people are able to just not go there. You know, and as we all know in our training, just not going there is an important way to deal with things sometimes. You know, if we can't handle something, sometimes the best way is to step away until we're fine, we're at that place. Okay. Or one may apply to that person the fact of ownership of karma. This worthy person is the owner of his karma, the heir of his actions. His actions are the womb from which he has sprung. His relations are his protection. Whatever he does, good or bad, he will be heir to that. So we know that, kind of, you know. But it's true, you know. What people do, they are the owner of. They get the consequences. It's said, you know, that the perpetrator actually is the one that suffers the most. And in Buddhism, you do not escape karmic consequences. You just don't escape them. You know, maybe it's not immediate, you know, but they catch up with you. You know, I've heard about people who I deeply admired, and then they commit suicide, and I have to think, what was that? You know, was that some kind of karma that finally caught up with them? Was there something, you know, for all the things they had going for them in their lives, there was something they weren't dealing with? I don't know. I mean, I don't mean that as a judgment, but, you know, we all are the owners of our karma. Okay. These are the five ways of getting rid of a grudge by which a monk can remove all grudges that have arisen within him. So it's a nice teaching of the Buddha. You know, as I say, I'm sure grudges arose. I'm sure, you know, the Buddha taught forgiveness and moving on and tried to offer different ways for us. So I just want to end by saying, first of all, thanking you again for your generosity to us. You know, we deeply appreciate it. We deeply appreciate you. Okay? And I know Reverend Master Mayon, I talked to her last night, and I know she expresses that, you know. It's a fourfold sangha. We're really, we need you. Hope you kind of need us. You know? we need each other. And I think at this time of year, you know, we've got the Buddha's enlightenment, we've got Christmas, we've got New Year's. I kind of like this time of year because there's, at least in the way that I've viewed it over the years, is there's a bit of hope that isn't seeming to be shining at other other times of year. You know, maybe people are a little nicer, a little kinder, a little more forgiving. But I think that the world could really use us all working on forgiveness for each other. I think that's what will give us a heart at rest, give us a world at rest, give us peace. Because without that forgiveness, we just continue the cycle of stirring it up and fighting with each other and, you know, breaking up into camps. And you know, the world's too close now. It's not a good way to go. It never was, but it's right in front of our faces now. So, you know, it's just a thought. It's easy to forgive the people that are close to you, usually, or that you care about, and it's more difficult to forgive or to open your heart, is a way to put it, to people that you have difficulties with, that you feel there's antagonism from, that there's been a wrong perpetrated from their end. And forgiveness is not about being a doormat. You know, it's not like, oh, I forgive and people can walk all over me and it doesn't matter, you know, I can take it. And that's not forgiveness. I think that's kind of silliness. I mean, actions have consequences, and unperceptual actions, they cause hurts and difficulties for other people. And these are, I don't wish them on anybody. but they happen. And at least in kind of reflecting on my own life, rather than forgiving people, I could see forgiveness of myself. I wish people would forgive me. Because, I don't know, maybe I've been lucky or something. I don't know, but... So I think it's something to remember at this time of year and into the new year. And remember that the place that we practice it is in our everyday lives, in our actions, okay, in our words, and in our mind. And the wonderful thing with our practice is it can go to the mind, you know, and it can change the mind in the way that we view things in the way that we treat ourselves and other. Because that's the way things will change, okay, when we go that deeply with them. So, thank you again.